The news is carrying what you have to say. And to see this conference hall so full, I think is really, really uplifting. It feels like a very, very successful conference. And it's great to be here again with you. As Minette said, my first speech to your conference was on Zoom. And it's not just quite the same, is it, when it's all done on Zoom. And I have to say, there was a moment over the weekend where I thought I might have to do it again, because you'll have seen the briefings, that the protocol discussions have been going forward, and it's been briefed over the weekend that the protocol was going to be signed off on Tuesday, which would have meant that just about now the Prime Minister would be making a statement in the House of Commons, and I would have to be back there with him responding to it. So I'm very glad for the time being that the protocol hasn't quite been signed off, so I can be here with you. And it is fantastic to be here. I have to say, when I'm asked to come to an NFU event, I never actually imagine a venue quite like this. In my head, I've got sort of rolling fields in Yorkshire, or perhaps your farm, Minette, beautiful farm in beautiful countryside. But, you know, here we are in Birmingham, and you can take it from me that the local bullring isn't quite what you might think here in Birmingham. But as it happens, look, there are farms near here. Of course there are. This is Britain, even in the most built-up part of our country. You're never far from a farm. I was on one this morning in Solihull with Rupert, an NFU member, naturally. And Minette, yes, I was wearing my boots and my bomber jacket on the farm, as I was when I came to your farm. It actually took me back, because it's a little-known fact that my first job when I was about 14-year-old was on a farm, because I lived on the Surrey-Kent border. It wasn't a particularly sophisticated job. I was allocated to pick up stones in a field, for which I got about 50p. But it was a farm, and it was my first job. But I spoke to Rupert in Solihull on his farm this morning. He grows cereal crops and tends to a herd of beef cattle. So he's got a mixed farm. And we chatted this morning, and amongst the things that he said to me, he told me, was that it sometimes feels like farmers aren't listened to. And I thought about that, because I talk a lot about respect. Now, that's not something you can tax or regulate, but it's a value that shapes how we see the world, how we feel about our country. I think it's really important. I saw this with my dad. He was a toolmaker. He worked in a factory all his life. And he always felt that people looked down on him, didn't respect him and what he did. My sister's a care worker, as it happens. What she feels about the respect shown to her efforts in the pandemic by the government, I probably better not share with you. But, conference, my point is this. I obviously go round our country, and I know there's a feeling that politics doesn't respect people. I know there's a sense that decisions which affect communities are taken miles away by people with little empathy for their challenges, that somehow politics is done to people, not with them. And I know this sentiment is especially strong when it comes to farming and the countryside. So let me start by acknowledging Labour's role in that. It's not deliberate. We do care deeply about the countryside. But if we face facts, I think all too often, when I reflect on the Labour Party, we've come across as the party of urban Britain, only mentioning the countryside to say what we can't do, not what we can do. So if I only get one message across today, let it be this. This is a different Labour Party. I won't bore you with all the details, but over the last 3 years since I've been leader, I've had an intense focus on changing our party. And we've changed that party from top to bottom. A party that's fit to serve, that's compassionate and competent, that aspires to govern for every corner of our country, and yes, that seeks a new relationship with the countryside and farming communities on that basis. And that has to be a relationship based on respect. on genuine partnership. Tony Danker from the CBI spoke this morning just before lunch. And Tony knows that my Labour Party wants to transform the way Britain is run. That we will give communities the tools to control their economic destiny. And that can only be good for the countryside. But also that we see real partnership with businesses, with unions, with communities as an economic imperative. That's the scale of the task. The damage this government has done means that we all need to pull together, change how we go about things, try something new to get the growth our country needs. And farming is a massive part of that. Nearly 60% of the food we consume. Renewable energy for 10 million homes. Custodians of 70% of our land. And, of course, 4 million jobs. And then there's net zero. A monumental challenge for this industry. But one that you've run towards. Net zero by 2040 across England and Wales is tough. But it's right. A reaffirmation of farming's role as custodians of our natural environment. And, if I may say so, the sort of leadership we need to drive our country forward. I mean, I want to thank you for that leadership and thank this room for that leadership because it's very, very important. And for your openness in always not only listening to Labour's case, but rightly challenging us when we get things wrong. The best decisions, in my experience, are the ones that are held up to the right light and survive scrutiny. And the worst decisions are the ones that have never been challenged. And let me assure this room, that openness will be reciprocated by my government if we win the election next year. And, conference, what I hear from Net, what I heard on the farm this morning, is the same as I hear from businesses across the country. The need for certainty, for stability, for a long-term strategy. This is not the place to waste words on the government. But make no mistake, they aren't going to get this. They aren't going to understand the chaos that they've caused and what the cost is. I don't think they can change themselves, and they won't change our country. They're part of the broken system that creates that feeling, that lack of respect for communities across Britain. Short-term crisis management instead of long-term solutions. I call it sticking plaster politics. And it's at the heart of so many challenges that grip our country right now. Distracted by short-term obsessions that fixate Westminster. Held back by a cynicism which uses low trust in politics as an excuse to narrow our ambitions. And blinkered to the potential of an active government setting the direction. We lurch from crisis to crisis. Always reacting, always behind the curve. A sticking plaster, never a cure. Unable to raise our sights and nurture a collective sense of mission. And farming is a cut and dry example of this. You're going through a huge transition with the environmental land management schemes. In the main, a good transition. A system that rewards public good is right. We can't lose sight of food production. We can't lose sight of farming as a business. But sometimes, because of the sheer breadth of farming's contribution, its social importance to the environment and nature, to the countryside, its way of life and our national identity, we lose sight of farming's ultimate goal. We need that contribution. And we need sustainable food production. You can have both, and Labour will work with you to get both. The conference, look, I know this shift is everything to British farming. The stakes are so high, livelihoods are on the line. Rolling these schemes out well is the difference between viable farming businesses and abandoned farms. We can't have underspends in the allocated money. We can't have farmers struggling whilst they wait for the right SFI standards to be announced. We can't have everyone burnt out by the bureaucracy and constantly moving goalposts. It's too important, especially now in this trading environment. Your input costs, energy, fertilizer, feed, gone through the roof. But the market pressure, the social pressure, which comes with rising food prices, that still remains. You don't need me to tell you all about that. That every day seems to bring a new existential risk to British farming. From bovine TV to avian flu and dramatic changes to our climate. Or that losing a farm is not like losing any other business. It can't come back. That's why the lack of urgency from the government, the lack of attention to detail, the lack of long-term planning, it's not on. You deserve better than that. You deserve a government that listens, that heeds early warnings, that shows the level of ambition needed to tackle the challenges you face. This is the country that developed a vaccine for the world in less than 18 months. And yet it's nearly 15 years since the threat of bovine TV escalated sharply across the countryside. Are we really saying an active government, a government with a purpose, couldn't do better than that? No, it's sticking plaster politics, a way of governing Britain that will end with my Labour government. The conference, here's the challenge. Any responsible incoming government must take seriously the need for certainty. The short-term attention spans in Westminster, I see them every day. They're part of the problem. But the world did change when Russian tanks rolled into Ukraine last year. And the war hasn't stopped. As you may have seen, I went to Ukraine last week. I flew to the border with Poland. From there, you get a train, 12 hours on a train, into Kyiv. And that took me through vast swathes of Ukrainian countryside and farming lands. And I could see for myself the impact that this awful conflict is having on the farmers and on their land there. I had the privilege of meeting President Zelensky and being able to say to him face to face that the support for Ukraine in the United Kingdom is genuinely united. There will not be a political divide. And that should there be a change of government at the next election next year, the support will remain the same. But the part of the trip that really struck me most was going to the outskirts of Kyiv, where I went to some of the neighbourhoods that were most impacted in the early days of the conflict. And I'd seen before some of the images, you probably have seen them, of civilians blindfolded with their hands tied behind their backs and shot in the head. I went to talk to the people who had gathered those bodies up on the roads that I walked down with them, their friends, their brothers and sisters, their community. They were left to retrieve all those bodies and put them into a mass grave, which they dug in the church that I was standing in with them on Thursday of last week. And it was important. It was certainly humbling. And their sense, whether it's farming or the railways, that every day they will go back to work. They will not be defeated. If the railways are going to get bombed, they're going to rebuild them and get the trains running again. That courage and resilience was absolutely incredible to see. And it really brought home to me yet again just how awful that conflict is. And so I'm very pleased that the solidarity this conference has shown in the face of the consequences is inspiring. The solidarity, I think, that shows the best of our nation, standing shoulder to shoulder with farmers who now till on the front line of freedom. But the world did change just under a year ago, and the consequences have to be managed. So on environmental land management, I say it's the right direction, and there's no point overturning the apple cart, but where there are problems, we will work with the NFU. We will work with everyone who wants to see the rural environment well managed. We will fix them. That's partnership. Equally, the principles that drive the Rock Review into tenant farming are sound. Nothing shows the value of certainty more clearly than this. Tenant farmers need a fair deal. They need to know their futures are secure. And look, I want to see more solar farms across the countryside. We've got high hopes for solar energy in our Green Prosperity Plan. There'll be opportunities for farmers, opportunities for rural growth, cheaper bills, and in the long term, real energy independence. But we can't do it by taking advantage of tenant farmers, farmers producing good British food on carefully maintained fertile land. They can't plan properly if the soil beneath their feet isn't secure. It's a huge barrier to plan sustainable food production. And we've got to give them a fair deal. We've got to use our land well. Got to do it, conference, because we need food. The world has changed. Feeding a changing world, that's the strapline here today. And it's true. That's the challenge. What's happened to energy production since the war broke out shows where this is heading. All around the world, businesses are looking again at the resilience of their supply chains, reacting to the crisis we've faced and will face in the future. And countries must do the same. This is not protectionist. It's the reality of delivering national resilience in our era. The former Director General of MI5, Baroness Eliza Manningham Buller, has said that food supply, in her words, is part of our national security. She's right. Food security is national security. That's become very clear in the last 12 months. That's why the Labour Party is committed to buying, making, and selling more in Britain. We've committed to reforming public procurement, using it sensibly and carefully to build up our sovereign communities in key industries. It's a crucial aspect of our industrial strategy, our partnership, our plan for national resilience. And seasonal, sustainable, British-grown food is a key part of it. So the next Labour government will commit to this. 50% of all food purchased by the public sector will be food that's locally produced and sustainable. By the way, that's £1.2 billion of public money spent on quality food that is genuinely better for people's health. A clear-cut target for every year that we're in government. And look, 50% is just the minimum. We'll do everything to go beyond it. We will buy more cereals, more oilseed rape, more strawberries, more beef, more British apples. And we will open up new opportunity to export them as well. Conference, there are three further areas where Labour will combine certainty with change. And trade is the first. Look, it's been obvious for a long time that the Conservative Party has given up on farmers. That trade deal with Australia, a win-win deal, they called it. But look, it's certainly a deal like no other. More than a £300 million hit to British food and farming. And there's at least one Tory MP, she's still boasting about it. Labour's approach to trade will be very different. I can promise you that. We want to remove barriers to exporters, not put them up. Protect high British standards, not water them down. Understand that in trade, distance matters. Everything in trade is up for negotiation. You can't make cast iron guarantees. But we are going to talk to our friends in the European Union, and we are going to seek a better trading relationship for British farming. We're going to talk to them about a new veterinary agreement for agri-products. And not just in Northern Ireland, not just to fix the protocol, but for the whole of the United Kingdom. But conference, just being serious about growth means we have to have a plan for trade, but also a plan to deal with the basic lack of people. This is the second area where partnership with Labour will seek change. A tight labour market is crippling whole sectors of our economy at the moment, and I know that farming has been hit hard. I mean, what's happening to pig farming is absolutely shocking. And Labour would not ignore that. We won't allow a situation where temporary shortages gum up an entire supply chain. That's anti-growth, it's anti-business, and it's anti-farming. Equally, of course, I know the seasonal nature of farm work makes it unique, and that the seasonal worker route is a distinctive solution to a distinctive challenge. And we'll be pragmatic on that as well. But I also have to say, the reality is the era of abundant cheap labour is over. That's not about Brexit. It's a practical challenge we're going to have to work through and solve together. Trust me, all around the world, businesses are waking up to the fact we live in a totally new era for labour. The world has changed. But it can be good for our economy and good for farming if it's managed well. So any movement in our points-based migration system must come alongside a plan, a shared undertaking, an understanding to move forward to a different model. Because over time, our goal must be to help the British economy off its immigration dependency, to improve pay and conditions where we can, work together to get the technological innovation we need deployed in our fields, and carefully move towards a new, more resilient model for British farming. A model where you're not nervously waiting each year to see if you have the staff, and where whoever's in power, you're less dependent on the Home Office to stop food rotting in your fields. For conference, let me tell you one thing I won't accept. That rural communities should be blighted by crime that routinely goes unpunished. And this is the third area where we'll offer change, where Labour always offers change, public services. Nobody should be waiting over an hour and a half for an ambulance. Nobody should get burgled time and again with no prosecutions. Nobody should be comfortable that mental health support is scarcely available. And with all these problems, I know there are subtle differences that make them even more worrying in rural communities. You know, if the NHS is telling heart attack patients to get a taxi, as they are in parts of our country, that's a lot scarier if you live in the countryside. If your village has an antisocial behaviour problem, or a fly-tipping problem, or an off-road biking problem, and the only police officers around are in a station or custody suite miles away filing an arrest, off the street for hours, that's a unique problem. And if you're facing poor mental health because of stress and anxiety, which we know is a hidden challenge for many, many farmers, and there's a 2-year waiting list for treatment, that will harm rural communities. Conference, the truth is, some of this comes back to people as well. So we have a plan, fully costed. In the NHS, we'll get more doctors, more nurses, more health visitors delivering care in your community. And in crime, we'll get 13,000 more police into our towns and villages, more police on countryside streets. And we'll also have thousands more well-trained mental health staff, which means we can guarantee treatment for everyone who needs it within a month. But on public services, it isn't just enough to have more people. We also need to reform how we work. We need our healthcare to be delivered where people are, not just in hospitals. We need our police to be visible, trusted, earning the respect of those they serve. We need our mental health services to understand the individual challenges we each face, challenges that are different in the countryside. All of this requires reform. All of this requires a different approach, one that is designed from the start with respect for the challenges of the countryside. That's why dialogue and partnership are so important. On every area, on public services and our economy, we need to show we're listening to the distinctive concerns of rural communities. Work every day to build that relationship of respect. I am so grateful to the respect the NFU has shown me, inviting me here every year. It gives me the chance to show how important service to all our country is for my Labour Party. Because the challenges the countryside faces, that farming faces, we need to take them on together. That's why we're ready to listen, ready to partner, ready to serve a fairer, greener, more dynamic future for British farming. Certainty and change, stability and success, environmental stewardship and sustainable food production. You can have both. It's what Labour will offer, what real national resilience looks like. And I look forward to working with you to secure it. Thank you so much, Conference. Thank you.
Sir Keir, thank you. I'm now really up against it with the questions, so we will need to be as quick as we possibly can. And if I could have Mark Gorton and Helen Trinkle to the microphones, please. And I'll kick it off. You talked, Sir Keir, about the challenges of trade deals. And the impact, the negative impact that they potentially will have. And we heard indeed Jim McMahon this morning on the radio talking about the challenges of the Australian trade deal and being extremely critical. I guess what lessons do you take from this, and what would a Labour government change?
Well, look, thank you, Minette, for starting with that. Of course we want to trade across the world. We want to be able to export. And therefore we want to reduce barriers. But we have to be really clear, I think, about standards and high standards. I think one of the biggest concerns about trade deals, now we've left the EU, is that there's a tendency, an inclination to drive standards down in order to get deals. And that is the wrong approach. We have to be clear that there have to be high standards wired in to our trade agreements. That's why I am concerned about the Australian trade deal, because I do think it will do real harm to farming here, to rural communities. So, yes, we want trade deals. Yes, we want to reduce barriers to those that need to and want to export. We need to keep our standards high. We were the champions of high standards. We have very high standards in this country. And we need to also recognise, as I said in my speech, that when it comes to trade, particularly, you know, trade that involves, you know, farming, etc., distance matters. We trade more with our nearer neighbours than we do with distant neighbours, and therefore we need high standards and a decent deal. And that's why we do not accept that the deal we've got, the Brexit deal we've got at the moment, is good enough. And we will improve upon that and make improvements for farming.
Thank you. Mark Gorton.
Thank you, Minette. Good afternoon, Sir Keir. I'd like to talk to you about, or ask you about, Labour. Not specifically your sort of Labour, but Labour as in boots on the ground. I'm from the poultry sector, but can probably speak on behalf of the livestock sector, in that we need workers 24/7, 365 days a year to do hard, manual, difficult jobs that, unfortunately, over the last 3 or 4 years since Brexit, we've found that it is very, very difficult, if not impossible, to recruit those workers from the national labour force. So what can you tell us, Sir Keir, that you would do in government to help resolve that problem?
Mark, let me first start by acknowledging the problem. I think whichever particular sector of farming you're in, there tends to be a problem. whether it's pig farming, whether it's poultry, whether it's picking apples and fruit, and things are now worse than they were. This has never been easy. I've been talking to farmers for many years now. This is always an issue, the seasonal workers issue. It's got a lot more acute in the last few years, and I don't think that we should take steps that inhibit you getting the staff you need, the people you need, the labourers you need right now. So we don't want to gum this up even more than it is already, and therefore we'll be pragmatic about it. But as I said in my speech, I do, and this is a conversation we need to have together, I think the days of cheap labour in the way that we have had for many years are probably over for a whole bunch of reasons. And therefore, we need to work together to find a different way forward. I think I'm a great believer in technology. I know technology takes time, and therefore we've got to do this on a gradual basis. So, a practical, pragmatic approach now, which ensures that farming and farming communities get the labour they need now. And that's the sort of warm bath bit of it. But the hard bit is we are going to have to change as we go forward. And we need to work together to ensure that we bring about that change, because I just don't see the model of labour operating in the future in the way that it has in the past. Thank you, Mark.
Just to be really, really clear, though, on that point, you know, we are a highly regulated sector. And, you know, this is yeah. not a low-pay sector at all. Indeed, the seasonal worker scheme that was outlined this morning is absolutely in line with the National Living Wage. The scheme that was outlined last year, the seasonal agricultural worker scheme, was set above our own National Living Wage. So, you know, in many ways, these guys have had to absorb huge cost at their own business expense to pay a higher rate of pay. So I think it's really important that we don't see this sector as low pay. I think there are challenges in getting a fair return for what we're producing, which is a massive issue right now. If I could have Andrew Broadley to the microphone and take Helen's question now. Helen.
Sir Keir, I believe under a Labour government, public rights over private land will be extended through right to roam. Are you aware of how disastrous this will be for urban fringe farmers like myself, for whom the general public already cause a lot of issues? An extension of right to roam could essentially write off productive livestock fields in our area, especially during sensitive times in the farming calendar. This is both from an animal welfare and farm safety perspective.
Helen, thank you for raising that, and I can see how important it is to everyone in the room. Look, I do believe in the right to roam, but we need to define what that means. It's got to come with rights and responsibilities, because we can't have a right to roam that tramples on the businesses of farmers. And therefore, whatever we do on this, Helen, and everybody in this room, we will do it in conjunction with you. We'll have that discussion. How does this look? What are the rights and responsibilities? People do want freedom to be able to walk across our fantastic countryside. But it's got to come with responsibilities, because we can't have any right to roam that interferes with the business and viability interests of farmers. So I tell you today, I'm very happy to work with you on this rather than to press ahead of it with it on our own, to talk through what that looks like, what the framework might be, so that you have the sense of comfort and security that this is something which doesn't have the impact, which you obviously fear from the reaction, Helen, to your question. So, yes, I believe in the right to roam, but yes, I believe the partnership working I was describing means I want, starting today, to talk to you about what that might look like, so that you can say this is how it should be shaped, so that it doesn't, in fact, infringe on the very legitimate concerns that you're raising with me.
Mm. I think it'd be fair, there isn't time to debate it now, but from this room, you heard it. And the huge concerns over livestock worrying, indeed, livestock slaughter from dogs that are on the loose. We have an incredible network of footpaths and bridleways that are actually unlike any other country in the world to allow people to access. But your point on doing it responsibly is going to be absolutely key, and for the environment, ground nesting birds and everything else. So you have, and we're thrilled to hear it, committed to work with us, and we look forward to doing that. Andrew Broadley.
Thank you, Madam President. Sir Keir, can you please confirm that Labour will continue to follow the science when it comes to disease eradication, especially that of BTB, where the control of wildlife alongside every other tool has been proven to work?
Andrew, I'm a great believer in following the science, and again, we'll work with you on this. This has been around, as I said in my speech, for a very long time now, and still we haven't made the progress that we need to. If we're a nation that's capable of producing a vaccine for the pandemic in an extraordinarily fast period of time and rolling it out, we have to move faster and better and quicker on issues like this. So, yes, we'll follow the science. Yes, we'll work with you. But also, we'll put our shoulder to the wheel. I do not believe it should take this long for us to make progress on this issue, which I know is of real concern, to so many farmers. The impact that this has on livestock, you're all rightly very, very concerned about even the prospect of this happening. So, yes, follow the science. Yes, work with you. Yes, I do believe we should move further and faster, and I think we can. We've proved as a nation what we can do when we really put our shoulder to the wheel when we were faced with the pandemic. We should take that model and use it all the time in everything that we do in government. Mm.
You're absolutely right to make the point, Sakir, about livestock, but the human impact of this disease, it is impossible to put it into words. When you get a breakdown on your farm and you have told that your herd has gone down with bovine TB, I don't think anything gets any worse. The human impact is incalculable because your hands are tied behind your back to a certain extent. And it's just worth pointing out that we've got the lowest levels of disease outbreaks that we've had in years and years. So sticking with the science, sticking with the evidence, eradicating this disease and ridding our country of both.
No, a number of farmers have described to me the fear of sort of waking up and being confronted with this reality. And so on a human level, it's one of those things that people genuinely have sort of nightmares about. You just do not...
But you talk about mental health, and rightly so. There is nothing that will cause a mental health breakdown more than this. I know we're out of time by quite a bit. Can I just get one more question in?
Of course.
Please, Tim Dobson, can you run to the microphone, please?
Conference. Looking at bringing in migrant labour into the marketplace, it seems far more attractive for labour to stay in Europe, where they're actually wanted and needed, than to come here. What will you do to make the UK a more attractive place so that our pig farmers, our poultry farmers, our fruit farmers can attract workers to come to work for us?
Well, Tim, look, thank you for raising that, because obviously the situation has changed in the last few years. I'm not going to pretend. I mean, I was talking to farmers back in 2015, 2016, before we had the referendum, and there were real problems then with seasonal workers and how the seasonal worker schemes work. So this has been an ongoing problem. It's got a lot more acute. We have to make this an attractive place for people to work, to come to, but we also need to look at longer-term solutions as well, using technology, etc. We need to look at our own workforce as well. We've got many, many people out of work, out of the labour market here, who only 2 or 3 years ago were in the labour market. So I think, Tim, there's a lot we can do together on this. But as to the acuteness of the problem that you're facing, I absolutely get it. If you can't get the labour in, then it's, whether it's pig farming, poultry, fruit farming, it has such an impact. So we have to find a way through this together. We also have to have a sense of purpose for our country. One of the tragedies, I think, of the last few years, I don't want to get too party political because this is not the place, but the drifting of the UK off the international stage, the sense of drift as a nation without purpose, I think is having a profound effect on our economy and our well-being. Our economy hasn't grown significantly for the best part of 13 years. This is a massive problem. across the country, including in farming. If you don't have a thriving economy, then there's a sense of drift, and we have to address that, I think, as a country. And that will be one of the major missions, if you like, of an incoming Labour government.
The joys of this, you never know quite what questions are going to be asked. So actually the question I had down from Tim Dobson is, why should farmers vote Labour at the next election? He goes on to quickly say, Sir Keir, the Labour Party traditionally doesn't have a high level of support in rural constituencies, yet farmers tend to do better under a Labour government. How do you plan to persuade farmers to vote for you at the next election?
Well, the first thing, Tim, thank you for that.
He's got two bites of the same cherry.
Tim, thank you for that question. You got your first question in and your second one, which you sent in. Look, I want to be absolutely clear today, and it's something I think I said at the first conference I addressed, albeit that one was on Zoom, that I want the Labour Party to say as much about rural issues as it does about urban issues. There's a reason that 2 years ago, when I first addressed this conference, I was the first Labour leader for, I think, over a decade, Minette, to address this conference, because I wanted to come and have this dialogue. I know how important it is that all of the rural issues and concerns that you have are addressed. I grew up in rural, on the border of Surrey and Kent. I lived in a rural community. I know the impact that these issues have on farming, on our communities, on our countryside. So it's deep in my DNA. But if I can, Tim, say one thing that is about rural communities and rural farming, but it's broader than that. It is what we will bring into government as a Labour government is a different approach to governing. I am fed up to the back teeth with sticking plaster politics, with the idea that you just don't take long-term decisions, you wait for a crisis to unfold, and then you do the minimum necessary to get through the crisis and go on. And there are so many examples of this. We've had a winter NHS crisis every year for the last 13 years. The only thing is it gets worse every year. And every year we have a sticking plaster that just about gets us through until the spring. We breathe again in the summer, and then we go back into a crisis the next winter because we don't do the long-term planning. We don't do partnership work. Same thing with energy. I mean, you were saying this morning about the devastating effect that higher energy bills are going to have or could potentially have on energy-intensive farming. And, of course, that is now a short-term crisis that has to be addressed. I do think there should be more money for energy-intensive businesses, and farming is included in that. But that's a sticking plaster. That's to get us through this crisis. What we really should have done is to run towards renewables 10 years ago. What we really should have done is to insulate our homes 10 years ago. We should have gone down this road, but we didn't do strategic thinking. And so, Tim, if there's one thing I want to get across, it is that I feel a sense of drift in our country at the moment. I'd really invite everybody in this audience to ask themselves, do I feel better off than I did 13 years ago? Is our economy working better than it did 13 years ago? Are our public services better than they were 13 years ago? And if the answer to all those questions is no, then there's a very, very powerful case for change. And what we would bring in change is not just what we would do, but how we would do it. And we will govern in partnership with yourselves and businesses. And as Tony Dank and I have talked about this at great length, there are two or three models for government. One is a government gets elected in and says, well, we got elected, we've got the mandate, we'll suck it all up to the centre, take decisions in Westminster and Whitehall, and do a sort of command and control. That is wrong, it won't work, and we wouldn't do it. The other is to say, well, we've got elected in, we've got a mandate, but the market always knows best, let's just leave it to the market. I don't think that works anymore. It certainly doesn't work in farming. Or, and this is our approach, we will form and forge a genuine partnership with businesses, with farming communities, with others, to actually do this together, where the government says, this is what we're trying to achieve, but we need to achieve it with you, each understanding what the other has to do. The government doesn't need to do what you do, but the government, or a Labour government coming in, needs to understand what you need a Labour government to be. That's why I like the challenge from Minette, because I need to know what are the levers that you want us to pull in government that will allow you to get on and prosper in what you want to do. I don't want to do your job. I want to make it easier for you to do your job so you can thrive and prosper. And that's the nature of government, Tim. It's more than just what we'll do. It's how we'll do it.
Conference, I am well over time. It's fair to say your team are looking as angry as my team now. So there we go.
Well, thank you for having me.
Conference, please show your appreciation to Keir Starmer.
Thank you.